The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Worst First. And, whoa, do we have some worsts?
Girl. Podcast was made for me.
It was made for you. I have author, actress, director Gabrielle Stone here. I'm so excited to have you here. She's the author of Eat, Pray, Fuck My Life. I mean, how perfect is that? Yeah. You just totally like turn the whole thing around. Like,
it's so exactly what my 2017 was, girl. And it's like every worst back to back in my life.
I read the summary, and I was blown away just by what I read in the summary. Yeah. I mean, we're not giving the book away. This is in the summary. You can read online. You were married for a year and a half.
I was married for almost 2 years.
Your mic as close as you can.
We were together longer than that, together for almost for 5 years.
Wow.
But married for almost two, found out that he was having an affair with a 19-year-old for 6 months.
A 19-year-old.
Yeah. Blew my life up.
How did you find out? Like, was it a phone thing? Or
no,
was it...
So it was, oh God, it was like, I originally wasn't going to write about it in the book. Yeah. And then my girlfriend was like, no, Gabrielle, you have to, that shit was like an episode of CSI. Like, you have to write about it.
Dead. You and, got all investigative reporter.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that I did, because the amount of women that reach out to me and they're like, oh my God, the same thing happened to me. It's sad, but true. Mm. So I had been really unhappy in our marriage for a while. Like, something had just been off. We were in therapy, but like nothing was working. I didn't understand why at the time. And he ended up going on a work trip. Mm-hmm. I had found some questionable shit on his phone. Not that I looked for, like we were just open with each other and like would randomly look at each other's social media and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had found some questionable stuff. He had lied his way out of that, but like my guard was definitely going, like, something's not right. So he goes on this trip and I'm at our house that we live in together. And I go into our office to get something, and his MacBook that he had in there, ding, ding. And I'm like, oh, okay. Ignored it. Kept getting my shit. Ding, ding. So I go over, I look at the computer. His email is open on the computer. Still till this day, I have no idea what that password is.
What a dumbass.
Right? Like, at least, you know, come on. and there's an Uber receipt from where he's supposed to be going in Florida, going all the way to Miami. And I'm like, okay, well, something's wrong. This is not right. So I check the trash email. And it's like every single receipt that, you know, like couples massage, the Four Seasons in Westlake, like down the street from my house. Oh yeah. Like every receipt replicas of like dates that he had taken me on to like the Beverly Hills Hotel and like dinner at this place. And just every single receipt was in the trash.
So it was like a full on affair. Like he was taking this chick on dates.
Oh yeah.
Massage.
Trips. Yeah. 6 months. 6 months. And I trusted him so implicitly that I genuinely had no idea. Like even up until the day before I found the receipts, I was at this industry event and I looked at my friend and I said, I don't think he's done anything physically. I don't think he has the balls to. And I just vastly misjudged the size of his balls, apparently.
Wow. Wow. And did you, now here's, and this is a personal question. You don't have answer this. Was he sleeping with you still?
Oh yeah. So, and that was the most fucked up part of it. Like, look, if I'm being honest, I wasn't heartbroken because I had been so unhappy for so long in my marriage that I was not in love with him. I loved him as a person, but I think I married him because he was safe, because of some of my past, you know, traumas with men. And I genuinely was just, it was betrayal and rage. And that was one of the fucked up parts, was looking at all the receipts. I was like, oh, you were banging her at this hotel and we slept together that Saturday, like the day after, not even 24 hours. And I know he was not like a condom person. And like the violation of my body, like I'm your wife, bro.
We That's took putting your health.
Yeah. And so my first thing was like, holy shit, I got to go get tested. I have to like, who knows, like if it's just this girl, if it's other girls, like, oh my God, it was totally blindsiding in so many ways.
Did your, okay, so you found the emails. Did your heart just sink?
Oh yeah. Like my heart dropped out of my ass and it was, it immediately, I remember calling my mom and just in tears of rage, like he's cheating on me. And I called five people in the span of that hour. And it was like my mom, the guy at the industry party who I had been like, he's not doing anything physically. And my girlfriends, my, you know, three close girlfriends. And it was like the same conversation. And it was just like this cathartic release of like, this is what's happening. I'm getting a divorce. Let's start moving pieces now.
So how do you... You get all this advice from your friends, your mom, you kind of calm down a little bit. And then how do you confront him? Because he's still on the trip.
Yeah, he was still on the trip. And that was probably the hardest week and a half of my life because he was still on this trip. When he had left, there was a big fight before and I had kind of told him I needed some space. So we weren't talking a lot, but I still had to keep up the facade that I didn't know anything. So I would send texts and like, you know, just like the bare minimum of what I needed to do. But I started getting everything in place to file for divorce. So I had to like meet with attorneys, like hire an attorney and figure out how I was going to serve him the papers when he came home.
Wow. Did you guys have a prenup?
We didn't, but we didn't need one. Like nobody had
anything to
significant.
Take from anyone else.
Luckily we were renting the house that we were living in. Like we didn't really own anything together. Thank God I didn't have kids with him.
Yeah.
Like it, for all intents and purposes, it was a pretty... It should have been a pretty easy divorce.
Right.
So he came home.
Oh my God.
And stayed at the girl's house. First, okay, wait.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Okay, let me back up. So the way that we found all of this was once we found the trash emails, I called the Four Seasons, and this is all in the book, but you know, spoiler alert. I called the Four Seasons and was like, hey, my husband and I, you know, are in the industry. Sometimes we book under fake names for, you know, safety purposes, and I'm doing our taxes and I can't remember what services we got there. It's under this name, and it was the name under the receipts, which was Daniel, who's the name that I chose to change his name to in the book, and her name. And they were like, oh yeah, sure, let me pull it up. Pulled up the reservation and told me the names. And so I got her name from that, looked her up on social media. A very blonde, very naked 19-year-old pops up on my Instagram screen and she just so happens to be in Miami. So he flew her out there.
Oh my God. So she lived in LA.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He flew her out there. Did he even have a business trip in Florida?
He did. But this was the fucked up part. He had a business trip where he was coaching. He was a sports coach and the kids that he coached, he had been coaching for like 5 years. They were at our wedding. Those parents were at our wedding. I double dated with those parents. Like they were my friends and family. So he flew her out. And then I found out he took her to the second place they went to, which was Ohio, which is where, you know, his boys' tournament was. And I was like, oh my God, like she's now being paraded around all these people I know. Why has no one called
me? No one
me?
Told you
His
that their
father was there. And I'm sitting at home in LA going, okay, this is the situation. This is what's happened. Like it was one blow after another of disrespect.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So smart on your part though, by the way.
Oh, well, there was not even a question.
Yeah.
I didn't want to stay. It honestly gave me an out. Yeah. You know?
You were ready to go anyway. Yeah. So it was kind of like.
It was a huge blessing. I dodged a fucking army of snipers.
Right.
With that.
Why do you think, so when you married him, you were even a little unsure when you got married that this might not be your person?
I wouldn't say I was unsure.
Okay.
And granted, this took a lot of like, the rest of my crazy journey and a lot of healing to get to and to admit because it was so deep down.
Mm-hmm.
But I lost my dad when I was 6. Tragically, like walked in, found him dead on the floor from a heart attack.
Oh my God.
And then not healed from that, but you know, time passed. And when I was 18, my high school sweetheart was killed in a car accident. So it was like, I had a thing with
trauma.
The people that I love die in abandonment issues. Mm-hmm. So I think subconsciously I married my ex-husband because he was safe. You know, I wasn't fully in love with him. I loved him.
Mm-hmm.
But there were so many red flags looking back on it. He was never okay with my career. He was never okay with, you know, if I had to go do an intimate scene with someone, which granted is shitty,
mm-hmm.
but like he met me as an actress, mm-hmm. you know, he knew mm-hmm. that was my job.
How did you guys meet initially?
At a club.
Okay.
A club in Agora Hills. As weird as that even say. Yeah.
Wow. He hit on you.
He hit on me and he had known me from high school from like a random adult school class that I took. And he referenced when I met him and when he was hitting on me, once we started talking, he was like, I remember when you lost your high school sweetheart and I saw what you posted on Facebook and I screenshotted it because it really moved me. Looking back on that, it's like giant red fucking flag, yeah. Gabrielle. Like what? But at the time I was like, oh, that's so touching.
Yeah.
You know, but. Yeah.
So then, okay. So then you were together 5 years.
Yeah. So
when did you get married in that 5 years?
September 4th, 2015.
Okay.
Which will prove to be very significant later in the crazy story.
Okay.
But so they fly back from Ohio. We're following, my girlfriends and I are following all of this on her Snapchat.
And she's posting because she probably thinks.
Well, she's posting, but not his face.
Right, right.
So it's like their hands holding in first class and like them out to sushi at Nobu in Miami, even though she's not 21 and shouldn't be drinking. You know, like she's posting, but not his face. But I'm like, oh, cool. That's his white watch that I bought him. And like, you know, it was very obvious that she knew she couldn't show his face for whatever reason. I'm sure he had lied and. Who knows what he told her.
He's like, probably like, I'm going through a separation. Right. It's sensitive. Like, that's what guys say.
I know. Like all the bullshit that like, you know, young, impressionable 19-year-olds believe. So they fly back together. He then stays at her parents' house for 2 days and is in LA, does not let his wife know that he's back. And then 2 days after that, I get a text saying, hey, I just got back. I'm on my way. Can we meet up and talk? And I was like, yeah, I'm at the house. I'll be here until I have to go to an event at 3. Like, come on by. And I had a process server there, you know.
Already there, ready to go.
Waiting.
Yeah.
That walked out and handed him the papers. And I walked out of the house and was like, look, I know everything. But if you want to come in and talk about it, you can. And he was like, yeah, of course I want to. And we walked in. And I was like, leave the door open. He's like, God, I'm not a psychopath. Okay, dude.
Yeah, but like, leave the door open. But you're like a huge liar and very scary.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And in that conversation, he never really owned up to anything. It was more, you know, just, I think we were too young and like, I wish the best for you. And I want,
God.
You know, da, 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 da. And then when it came to discussing like how we were going to do this split and move and all that, he was like, please, Gabrielle, just whatever you do, don't come after my new sports deal. He had just signed this like huge deal that was going to really like set him up. And I said, then say it. He was like, say what? I said, say it. And this went back and forth like 4 times.
Yeah.
And he finally said that I've been in another relationship. And that was all he said about it. Grabbed my keys, was like, bye. Walked out of the house. It was like, I'm free. I knew that this was going to propel me into a entirely different chapter in my life that was going to be so much better.
Wow.
Because I would have stayed, you know, I had made a commitment. I got married, like, and I did have love for him. So I would have stayed in that relationship that was so fucking unhealthy for so long trying to make it work because I didn't want to you know, we had just had this beautiful wedding that my mom worked her ass off to throw us. And, you know, we had all of our friends and family were there. And like, I got married.
Yeah.
Like, that means something to
me. It's not just like a, you know, fun. Same with me. Like when I got married, I like told my husband, cause he'd been married a couple times before me. And I said, this is it. Like, I'm not, you know,
like it's a serious thing.
Yeah. I take it very seriously.
Yeah. As do I. And so, you know, I would have been in that for a really long time. And I'm thankful that it happened the way that it did because he made it so easy for me to walk away.
Yeah. And so you said that there were warning signs and you guys were in therapy. Like, what was the first signs that you noticed that you were like, something's not right?
Of the affair?
Mm-hmm.
He would go to the bathroom a lot and be in there for extended periods of time.
With his phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, look, I take my phone into the bathroom too, but it was like happening more and more.
Mm-hmm.
I remember New Year's Eve of 20, I don't even think I've ever told this story. New Year's Eve on 2016 going into 2017, we went with a couple of friends of ours to Mastro's in Westlake. And at midnight, we were like, yeah, Happy New Year, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, oh my God, I have to go to the bathroom so bad. And left and was gone for a solid 15 minutes. I now know that he was obviously like calling her.
And saying Happy New Year.
But it's
Year
like, you know, I mean, he had a second phone. It must have been exhausting. And
yeah.
We would talk openly throughout our relationship about it and be like, look, if you ever want to break up, dude, like, let's talk about it and tell us so we can be friends. And it doesn't have to be this, you know, shitty thing. And he like just hard left and went the opposite way.
And he would just never, you know, let you know that something, you know, he wasn't happy or
no.
He would just pretend everything was okay.
And I gave him so many opportunities when
we were
in those, like, you know, those like heavy crying fights where you're like bearing your soul. There were a couple times where he would cry and say, I don't know why I'm doing this to you. But I always took that as like making me miserable and like fighting and not like giving me what I was needing.
Yeah.
When I was working so hard at it. But no, he never owned up to it, even all the chances that I gave.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so crazy to me. I don't get why guys don't just
leave. Yeah.
I don't get that, or why they keep fighting when it's not something that they want.
And it's not like we had kids together.
Yeah.
There were no kids to stay for. We didn't have a house that I could like take half of, you know.
Yeah.
It was very much so like
it could have been a clean break.
Yeah.
And he had the opportunity before you even had to go through all this pain to say, listen, I guess, yeah, I should. So then did you stay in the apartment and he found somewhere else to live? Or
no. So we were in, we were renting a 3-bedroom house out where he worked in Oak Park. And I was like, look, he was like, look, I work right up the street. You know, like I have to stay. I had already packed half of my shit.
Yeah.
And like took all of our wedding pictures down and, you know, and so I was ready to go to my mom's. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to be in this house. I don't need to be in this house. I can't afford to be in this house by myself. So I left. A couple days later, there were pictures posted on her social media in a bikini on my white couch, straddling a pillow that my mother-in-law had bought me. I mean, it was just really trashy the entire way.
A couple days later?
Yeah. No, I don't know if it was taken a couple days later. It very well could have been taken when I was still living there and just wasn't home. Or on a trip, you know? But it was that it was handled was just so gross.
Ew.
You know?
Are they still together?
As far as I know, I've heard a lot of things from a lot of different people who choose to tell me. It's kind of, I'm so detached from it.
Yeah.
And was so quickly that it's kind of like comedy to watch it all play out.
Yeah.
So yeah, technically.
Yeah.
They are.
Oh my God. And so then you grew up out here?
I did.
Where did you grow up?
Woodland Hills.
Like Woodland Hills. Okay, so you were able to go be with your mom and have a safe haven. And
at the ripe age of 28, I was like, cool, I'm getting a divorce and moving back in with my mom.
Hey, you're lucky you didn't have to move across state, though.
Oh,
you know, like,
in hindsight, like, I'm deeply lucky.
Yeah.
Like, I drove 6 exits and was like,
back
great,
home.
I'm safe.
And then your childhood bedroom or?
Not my childhood bedroom, but in the same home.
In the same home. Okay.
Yeah.
See, and that's just so, it's just mind blowing to me. You went through this and you're so strong because so many people, you know, go through this and it like tears them apart.
I think that what sets me apart from the people you're referring to is that I wasn't heartbroken.
Okay, you were already out.
It was like halfway out. Betrayal. It was rage. It was like, this is shocking. And like my whole life was pulled out from under me. But my heart wasn't broken.
Okay, because like, you weren't in love with him anymore. Right.
Like I was okay. Yeah. I was weirdly okay after. You know, I mean, obviously I cried and like I was angry and had a lot of like, I had to grieve that relationship and him because it was like grieving a death, you know?
Yeah, it is.
But as far as the whole divorce itself, I think my mom actually took it harder than I did. Aww. I was like weirdly like, this is going to be great and it's a blessing and I'm ready to move forward.
Wow. Yeah. And then did he ever reach out afterwards?
There were some times where he was reaching out about like petty stuff, like you can't take the bed and da 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 da, and like I'm going to be taking this back in this process. And I would just not answer anything and forward everything to my lawyer. And
yeah,
I really went radio silent and
good.
Yeah, that was it. I was so done.
Yeah. And so then I'm not going to give your whole book away because we don't want to do that. But then you meet someone else.
Yeah,
and this is like the whole premise of the book is that you meet someone else, you have like this whirlwind romance. You met someone else 2 weeks later.
Yeah. So for a little bit of context for everybody that just rolled their eyes and was like, oh, of course you just met someone else 2 weeks later.
No, sometimes you gotta, you know, heal your heart.
Yeah. And I had been unhappy for 6 months in my marriage. I had known about the cheating for 2 weeks before I left my house.
Right.
And I met this next person 2 weeks after. So it had been a month of me being like, I am getting divorced. Fuck this man. Yeah. And goodbye. I'm leaving.
Yeah. And not to mention you have been in a loveless pretty much marriage for a long time. So it's like you were ready for a new relationship because you hadn't really been in one.
Totally. Granted to say it is still very fast on the timeline. Right. I get it. I will also say the amount of DMs I get from readers being like, oh my God, I went through the same thing. Like it happens more often than not.
We all heal differently,
yeah.
You know, and I tend to do this. And my therapist calls it lily padding, where like if I go through a breakup, I'm pretty much in a new relationship within a month or two,
right?
Which isn't healthy to most people. And really I should learn to spend some time by myself.
Totally.
And before I married Tommy, I was actually single for a whole year.
Great.
And that's the longest I was single my whole life.
Yeah.
And then I got with Tommy because I was just trying to tell myself we don't need another person because I am very codependent. Would you say you're codependent as well or no?
I don't know if I would say codependent, but I definitely am in a relationship person. I feel better when I'm in a relationship. I feel like I thrive more in life when I'm in a relationship. Right. And I like the companionship. So I met this person, not met, we had actually dated super casually, like two dates, random making out, dancing, 6 years earlier. So before I even met my ex-husband.
Wow.
So randomly connect on social media, as it always happens. And we, long story short, end up going to the beach to catch up. And it goes from like 0 to 100. And I went thinking like, yeah, you know, he's Latin. I'm like, yeah, I want to go hang out with this hot Latin guy, have him take me dancing and like make out a little bit because I'm single now and fuck everybody else.
Yeah.
So I was banking on him being like my casual option.
Mm-hmm.
That is not what happened.
Oh my gosh.
So it literally went from 0 to 100. By the second day that we hung out, it was like, can you come to my friend's wedding? Him saying this, I'm going to date you. Oh my God, we're fucked. Like, what are we going to do?
Wow.
On both, it was fully intense on both ends.
And that's kind of red flaggy too, right?
Totally.
Like, wouldn't you say in retrospect? Because usually if someone says that intense of things right away, they're
completely
not the most stable.
And I knew, you know, of course, all my friends and family were like, oh my God, you know, pump the brakes. This is way too fast. But everybody also did recognize that I was weirdly okay after my divorce. Like they could see that I wasn't broken and, you know, devastated. And I would have never entered into a relationship if I was like that.
Right.
I've done enough healing and trauma in my life where I know that that wouldn't have been healthy. So we end up staying in a hotel together the second night we go out, not sleeping together, just staying up talking all night. And he looks at me and he goes, I don't know what to do. I have a month-long trip to Europe booked. And I don't know what to do. I was like, well, I would never tell you not to go travel. You should 100% go. And he's like, no, I'm not saying that. I want you to come with me. And of course, I'm like, you're fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what? We've been together for 2 days. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So we're together for 5 days straight before he had to leave to go visit family. And he kept bringing it up and was like, I'm serious. I want you to come. So the third time he brought it up, I looked at him and I said, okay, when are you leaving? Mm-hmm. He goes, September 4th, which would have been my 2-year wedding anniversary. And I was like, okay, when are you coming home? And he says October 4th, which is my late father's birthday. So I go, okay, universe, I hear you. I'm going on the trip.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So I book my ticket. He goes to visit family for a couple weeks. We're like, you know, when you're not physically together and it's all texting and FaceTiming and talking, it like makes your bond grow even more as mm-hmm. if you were together physically. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, I'm like, he's telling his family about me. He's telling his friends, like, this is it. This is the girl I'm going to marry. I'm going to have babies with this chick. Like, we're done. And I was feeling the same way.
Wow.
I was like, mom, I will move to Hawaii, live in a tent and have babies with this man and fuck everybody
else.
It
was like a whirlwind romance.
Yeah. It was like hard, fast, serious.
Uh-huh.
And everything was amazing. I booked my trip to Europe. He came home. I met his mom. We clicked right away. Oh yeah. Like it was like really, really intense. I went to his friend's wedding. He went on a work trip with me, where one of my films was premiering, and we were just inseparable.
Wow.
It was really like, I was like full on like, oh, I've never been in love because that's what this is.
Yeah.
48 hours before we were getting on the plane, he tells me he needs to go by himself. Yes, there's a backstory to all of this. But factually, it was literally 48 hours before. And he was like, I just feel like I have to go alone. I was fucking devastated.
Oh my God, are you kidding me?
I'm not. I wish I was.
Wait. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay,
guys, we are going to take a quick break on that cliffhanger and we will be right back with Gabrielle Stone on the Worst First podcast. Stay tuned. Okay, we're back. Okay, so literally the guy that's introducing you to his mom, telling you he wants to marry you, have babies with you, in love with you, whirlwind romance, you know, once he tells you to come with him to, you know, was it Spain? Or
it was Italy.
It just Italy, okay.
Yeah, for a month.
For a month. The 48 hours before calls you and what is he says?
So to give a little context into who this man, his name is Javier in the book. So
okay, Javier,
that's
perfect.
What we'll refer to him as.
Perfect.
I know, can't you just picture it? Like
totally,
hot, Latin,
yeah.
Deadly.
Just open shirt, yeah. Just wind everywhere he goes. Just Javier.
So fucking
super
annoying.
Tan, even in winter.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Javier, fuck you.
So
dead.
He, a year and a half before all of this took place, he lost his brother to suicide. And the first day that we had met on the beach to hang out, he had told me this and he was like, you know, he's an actor, of course. Mm-hmm. He was like, I went to go shoot a show for 6 months. I was gone. I felt like I really like healed being out of LA. And, you know, it was really, really hard for him at first. He went through, as anybody would, you know, I've lost people to suicide as well. It was hard for him at first, mm-hmm. but he had really felt like at the time and portrayed to me that he was on the other side of it.
Okay.
When we had come back from my work trip in Vegas, it was like a week before we were supposed to go to Italy. He started expressing to me that he was having all this grief come up. He's like, I don't know. I'm so frustrated because everything's been so perfect with us. I don't know what's wrong with me. Like I feel so disconnected from everything. And I don't know why I'm feeling this sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've dealt with a lot of death and a lot of grief in my life. So I was trying to be there for him and help him through it. And, you know, there were times where we were sitting there crying and I was trying to like, you know, give him as much sound advice as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have days where he seemed like he was pulling out of it. I would talk to his sister and she would be like, you know, he's never been this open with someone before. Like the way he talks about you, like, this is so different. Like, please just support him. And, you know, so I was like, okay, you know, we're going to get through it. Either we're going to go to Italy and we're going to have talks like this and you're going to cry every day and we're going to come back best of friends, or we're going to go and have a wild romantic time. And it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Either way, I'm here.
Right.
And so I knew that something was off mm-hmm. that week, but it wasn't until the 48 hours before he called me, and was like, I just feel like I have to go by myself. And we had a 3-hour conversation that night on the phone, both of us just hysterical in tears. And we decided that we would talk the next day. He would come to me and we would talk and decide if he was going to go alone or if he wanted us to go as friends, if I could even handle that notion. Mm. So he came and picked me up the next day and was like, I feel like I have to go by myself. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go too. And I think that really shocked him and made him proud of me at the same time. It was really weird the way our kind of like I guess breakup is what it was, when we were still so connected on like that soul level,
mm-hmm.
that it wasn't like, I wasn't angry at him mm-hmm. yet.
Okay.
It was just really, I was heartbroken.
Okay.
Like he broke my heart like my ex-husband never could have done. And yeah. I had never had my heart broken before.
Wow.
And it was put in a blender.
Oof.
Right after a pretty blindsiding and like brutal divorce.
Yeah.
You know? So it was a lot. Like my friends would call me and be like, we're just wondering what's going on with the Netflix show that has become your life.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So wild. You were like, fuck it. I paid for my ticket. I'm going to go.
Yep. I had like, I mean, literally my backpack was packed when I found out this news. And I was like, well, I mean, I can either stay at home heartbroken or I could go travel Europe for a month by myself.
And you're not scared of that? You're not like, I'm going to get kidnapped? Or...
I was terrified. Okay. I've seen Taken.
Yeah.
The only thing I knew about hostels on the plane over was that there's a movie about them and people get brutally fucking murdered.
And that's like, where you were planning on staying.
Yeah. So luckily I had, our flight was to London
mm-hmm.
and then was supposed to connect to go on to Rome. We went to the airport together. He took the picture of me that I posted announcing my divorce to the world because I hadn't like told anybody about it. And I was like, if I'm going to go on this fucking soul journey, I might as well like start with a clean slate and let everybody know what's going on in my life. And we flew on the plane together. I stayed in London. He went on to Rome.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to give the rest of your book away because I know there's so much on your journey.
Yeah.
In, you know, traveling by yourself and doing this all by yourself after all of this trauma. You know, and I know there's more with that guy,
yeah.
you know, so I don't want to give it away. You guys have to, where can we get this book?
So it's on Amazon exclusively. You can't get it in stores. So
Eat, Pray, Fuck My Life.
It's on Amazon.
Gabrielle Stone.
Or you can get it on my website, which is eatprayfml.com.
Eatprayfml.com or Amazon, you guys. I mean, I want to know the, you know, I feel like anyone listening to this wants to know what happened, you know, when you traveled. And
well, that's where the real story is,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, the men set it up and they were the catalyst for it. But like, it's really about me going on this trip and like
finding
making
yourself.
Some more mistakes, but like finding myself and like learning how to fucking love myself. Cause I didn't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, like you were saying when you took that year to be alone and like learn how to be alone. Since I was a little girl, since I lost my dad, I have had a fear of abandonment. And
I'm
not okay by myself. Mm-hmm. And this was the universe's clear way of being like, well, Gabrielle, you're going to go face that shit head on. And you're going to go learn how to be by yourself across the world.
I know. Not even with a
family
member
way.
Nearby, yeah. Not even an area, you know, not even anyone, you know, like by yourself I could never. I'm so in awe of you because I can't even get on a plane by myself, let
Thank
alone.
You.
Like, that's a huge thing, you
yeah.
know? You're very strong.
Thank you.
I think you've learned that, right, through the years?
I have. If that trip taught me one thing, it was how fucking capable I am by myself.
You're a warrior, dude.
Yeah.
I see your war paint.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, honestly, because... I mean, like, it takes so much as a person to be so fed up and to just go, fuck it, I'm going to... do me and find myself.
Yeah.
And how do you feel now at this point in your life? It's 2021. I know there's a lot going on in the world. So
yeah.
It's very complicated to ask how you feel now. But
right.
I mean, in terms
as a
of,
person,
as a person,
yeah.
aside from all the problems that are going on in the world, is you, Gabrielle Stone, how do you feel like inside? Do you feel like you are at a place that you are like fully healed or almost fully healed? Or like, how do you feel?
So this by no means happened when I came back from Europe. I wasn't like, oh my God, I'm fixed. Everything's great. I was terrified of coming home.
Okay.
It was probably the most scared I've ever been.
To come home?
Yeah. Because I wanted to keep going by the time the end of the trip came. Cause I knew I was coming home to get divorced and like deal, you know, I had gotten shitty threatening emails from his attorney while I was on my trip. And I knew that I was coming home to that mess.
Face that, yeah.
And to like be in reality.
Mm-hmm.
So I came home and there was definitely a lot more healing that had to go on that I learned a lot more about myself when I came home and was in my own environment. But again, that was in 2017. Now I'm like, I would not change any single part of what happened to me. And quite frankly, I would do it 10 times over because it not only changed my life, like I came back from that trip a different human in all of the best ways. And the continual growth has turned me into the woman that I am now, which I really love. But apart from what it's done for me, this book, the conversations that I have with the people that have read it, the DMs that I get on a daily basis, like it's, I feel weird saying this because it feels like I'm like patting myself on the back, but like it's changing people's lives. Mm-hmm. There's so many, I have male readers too, but there's so many women that are like, I left an abusive relationship after I read this book, or I filed for divorce after I read this book, or I chose to like stay and work on my relationship or marriage because I read this book, because it showed me that, you know, I needed to put myself first, but also put more into my relationship. And all the stories that I hear and the people that are moved by it and healed from it, because look, it is like reading a ridiculous Netflix story. Like it's funny. I curse. It's like, if you're hearing me talk now, that's how the book is. And it's wild, you know, like I have a one night stand in Europe. Like There's so much.
I already can imagine just sitting here with you right now. I mean, I've known people who have been to the brink of pure frustration in their life, and you just kind of go.
Yeah.
You just and like, fuck it.
Totally.
You know?
And it's a wild journey, but there's also so much self-help and healing techniques in it.
I love that.
But it's not like in your face, because you're learning when I'm going through it. So it's like me saying, okay, I'm going to start, you know, this technique. And it's like funny because you're watching me do it, but you're like, oh my God, I can do that in my everyday life. And it's totally fucking helpful.
What's some things that you've learned? Because I do have a lot of audience members that have like anxiety and depression, and they
deal with welcome. Me too.
Yeah. Hi guys. I mean, they're like, we're all here. The whole gang's here. What is one thing that you would say is really vital to like your life, that you, a technique or something that you've learned?
Yeah. So I write about it in the book. It's called The Self-Love Cocktail. Because obviously I have to equate it to some type of drinking. Alcohol.
Dead.
And it's really simple, but you know, I was on this quest, if you will, to figure out how to love myself, because everyone's always saying, you know, you have to love yourself before you can love anyone else. And you know, you're not going to have a healthy relationship until you love yourself. I was like, okay, cool. I'm ready to do that. Can anybody fucking tell me how?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could give me instructions on how to make that happen. I was like, I'm ready to do it, but nobody can tell me guidelines. And so I was searching for this, and I finally found it once I came back from my trip. So I write it in the epilogue because it didn't feel, you know, authentic to put it on my wild journey. But it's called The Self-Love Cocktail, and it's really simple. What you do is you sit down and you write out things that you can give yourself every day that makes your soul happy. So things that you love that make your soul happy. So for me, my list was like healthy eating, meditating, going to the gym, dancing, creating, anything that gives my soul joy. And you have your list, and you commit to giving yourself at least one or two things on that list every single day. So at first it's like a stiffer cocktail, like a vodka martini. And then once you're doing that for a couple weeks and you feel more comfortable with it, you start adding in other things on your list, and it becomes like a fruity mixology cocktail.
Wow.
And before you realize it, you wake up a month or two down the line and you're like, holy shit, I feel so much better. And it's because you're loving yourself.
Yeah.
So when I finally put together that loving yourself is as simple as giving yourself the things you love, It was like, oh, not only do I have control over this, which my anxiety ridden self needs to be able to like have control over how I feel and like, you know, things that I can gift to myself. It made so much sense to me, because when we're in a relationship, you know, whether it's a parent or a significant other, like when we're wanting to show that person love and make them feel loved, we're doing things that we know make their soul happy.
Mm-hmm.
So why, when we love ourselves, would we not do that for
us? Yeah.
I always thought it was like standing in the mirror being like, I love you, Gabrielle, but I felt like a fucking psycho.
I used to write things on my mirror like, you're worthy, great, and then people would come over and be like, all right, psycho, and I was like, yo, I have one bathroom, okay?
Hey,
like,
don't fucking judge me. Don't knock it till you try it. That shit works too.
It does work to write affirmations on your mirror. I mean, but this is great, and you have this list like put up somewhere so you can go like, okay, I did this or I did that.
Yeah, and it's like you have a literal checklist, and you're like, okay, at least I got two things done today. And it
that's
can be
great.
Simple things like a 15-minute meditation in the morning, if that's, you know, what floats your boat. Like it has to be stuff that makes your soul happy, that you don't need anyone else to give to you.
Right.
You know,
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that right now. And now you're in a happy relationship.
I am.
Which is so great.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is in the book. Is it that you met? Is this guy in the book that you met?
No, so I'm actually slowly but surely working on book two. Which
Yay!
People have been pestering me about since this one
came out. Eat, pray, love my life, right?
Right. So, and that one spans over a longer amount of time. It literally picks up when I get back from Europe and spans until the end of 2019. Mm-hmm. So he's in that book.
I love it. Yeah. So when you, okay, so I just want to know, because when you got home from your Europe trip, did you already know in your head you were going to write a book, or did you get home and go, I got to write all this down?
Okay. So I knew the second I found out I was going alone that I was going to write a book.
Perfect.
I don't know if it was because of all the crazy shit that had happened to me, like one thing after another. It was so disbelief. Like, I was like, I'm in a fucked up sitcom right now.
Right, right. Yeah.
And I knew that I wanted to write a book. And I had never written a book before. I had written, like, you know, short version screenplays, but like, I wouldn't have considered myself a writer by any means.
Mm-hmm.
Bought a leather bound journal the day before my trip and took it with me. I started it the first day that I was in London. I wrote 3/4 of it by hand in that journal.
Oh my God, by hand? Mm-hmm. My arthritis could never.
Yeah, yeah. In cursive for some reason, because wow. I'm like a masochist.
Wow,
I don't know.
Okay. Jeez. All right, Dorothy Parker. Yep, my yep. God.
But I mean, it was really for me, you know, and I still, like, obviously I went out, I partied, like I did, you know, I saw the sights. I did everything I was supposed to be doing on that soul journey. But the most therapeutic times for me was sitting in whatever hostel I was at or sitting at a cafe in Italy, you know, writing
how you felt,
my journey. And it wasn't like I was journaling and then I came home and turned it into a book. Like, if you open up the journal, it's like chapter one, and it's very close to how the finished book came out.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so then you finished this book, and then you said you ran it around to publishers and people were trying to get you to tone it down.
Yeah, everybody was like, a couple passed, and a couple others of the big ones were like, well, we just think maybe we should tone it back a bit.
I always want to do that.
And it's like, look, like, there's F-bombs throughout it. There's an F-word in the fucking title.
Yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, it was like, if I'm going to do this and I'm going to write this, it has to be everything that I authentically went through. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I going to sugarcoat stuff? Why am I going to shorten it? Why am I going to? So I you know, talk to a bunch of different people and finally was like, I'm going to self-publish. Another reason that I chose to go that route was because once you sign with a publisher, it's like a 2-year process till your book's on a shelf.
Oh,
and
wow.
Like, for me, I felt like I had been, I mean, really, like, emotionally raped, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. through what I had been through. And I needed to birth this book.
You needed it out. Yeah.
Like, my soul needed to, it wasn't going to fully get that healing journey completed until it was, like, out to the world.
Yeah. You know? You're like, I can't carry this baby for 2 years.
No.
Wow. I'm so proud of you. And even, like, the photography on the cover is just so, it's so cute. It's you.
Thank you.
It's her drinking a glass of wine, and it says, love for idiots on a book you're reading. And then, and so the title Eat, Pray, Fuck My Life, did you get any trouble from the Eat, Pray, Love people?
No, so you can't copyright a title.
Right.
So you're free to kind of do whatever you want.
I love that.
It's obviously, like, I wasn't trying to jack a title. It's a satirical play on a classic.
I don't even feel like you jacked a title. I think that you made it, like, because a lot of people that have read Eat, Pray, Love, I've never read it, but I watched the movie.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of people were like, oh my God, so, you know, romantic and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, this is real life.
This is not that book.
Right. This is real life. Yeah. This is the hard, nitty gritty, you know, real trauma, things that you went through. You know, this is like a real.
That's not to say, you know, I know a lot of the things in Eat, Pray, Love, she did go through a lot of traumatic things. But it's definitely a very different tone
take on it
of a book.
Yeah.
And it's an entirely different story.
Yeah.
I've had a couple people on some of my viral videos be like, oh, well, can you just kind of stole that title? And I'm like, no, but like, there's no other way to describe the journey that I was going on.
Because it's essentially like, because in the Eat, Pray, Love, she travels by herself and does
that.
But yours is a totally different spin on that. And, like, you know, I can tell you're funny and, like, you know, it's better for you to have it be. And I feel like this is more relatable.
I mean,
especially like the generation
own,
that we're in, you know what
for
I mean?
Sure.
Like, fuck my life. Everyone pretty much right now is like, fuck my life. You know what I mean?
A lot of the reviews did say it's like Eat, Pray, Love for this generation.
Yeah.
Although I have readers that are like in their 70s.
That's awesome.
Like, it spans, heartbreak and grief is universal.
Yeah.
So it's like everyone's going to connect with some part of it, you know, as long as you're okay with profanity, then you're going to be fine reading it.
I don't want to give anything away, but I'm so curious. Do you still talk to the guy that you were had this whirlwind?
It depends on like what month and year we're in.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that when, and this is, you know, a lot of this is in book 2, it was a saga of things when we came back. It wasn't like a cut and dry.
Oh boy.
Okay, we're gonna go our separate ways. It was definitely like there was
back and forth.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that I still needed to heal. I had no closure. And yeah, there was some interesting roller coaster moments that I think that's why all my readers are so excited for book two, because whenever I like do Q&As and stuff, everyone's first question is like, do you still talk to Javier?
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, you just have to wait and see.
It's Javier Bardem. I'm dead. Right. No,
can you imagine?
Gabriella, I'm shooting a movie. I want you to come. Just kidding. I don't. No, come. No, don't. No, do. No, don't. I can't. That's amazing.
It's a great Javier Bardem impression.
Oh my God. Well, I'm just so, I mean, all of you, I'm happy. Like, do you want to get married again? Do you want kids? What's
so
like?
So I am in a really happy relationship.
Okay.
We live together. We bought a house together. Okay. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. In the middle of a pandemic.
Right? Like, but there's insane. Great prices right now. That's the one thing I will say, yep. Folks. If you're in the market to buy a house,
which
the
is
prices
why we
are,
did it.
It's a which buyer's is, market.
It's why we did it. Yeah. And he has a now 8-year-old daughter.
Okay.
So I've gotten a good dose of birth control, if you will, for now.
She watches this. She's like, fuck you. I'm just kidding. Dead. No, but I feel you.
Yeah. It's not that it's I don't. I think I'm pretty sure I've always said I want kids.
Yeah.
Just not right now.
Right.
You know, like I feel like I have a lot of stuff going on with my career. Not that you can't do both, but like I'm really happy being able to only be responsible for myself.
For you.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big thing, right? You know, do you have a dog?
Three.
You have three?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's like three children.
They are my children.
I will say that. Yes. I have one. We just lost our other one, but I will tell you right now, my husband's like, I want to get you. Hi, honey. Mm-hmm. My husband's like, let's get a puppy. And at first I'm like, oh, it sounds really fun. But then I'm kind of enjoying just her because she's already trained. And
right.
I actually have, it's weird. You get like more time for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Wow, totally. Three dogs. My Lord. Yeah. I definitely don't want to throw a baby on that.
And two. Yeah, no. And two of them we got during quarantine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was, we rescued both of them. The first one we got, Finny. He's like my heart.
I love it.
And the second one we got a couple months ago because we were like, oh, let's get, you know, a friend for Finn because our other dog is 10 years old.
Yeah. Kind of not as playful.
Yeah, but we got him and now they both just like terrorize him. I'm like, well, this backfired. Great.
The old dog's just laying there like, fuck my life.
Yeah.
Okay, why don't you write a book about that, Gabrielle? Okay, fuck my life.
Totally.
He writes a book, How These Two Dogs Ruin My Life. He leaves it out for you to publish.
100%.
So that's great. And in terms of marriage, you're not like, you're like, kind of like, oh, we're just chilling. You got bought a house together. I mean, it's pretty much like you're married.
It
you don't really
much,
need the.
Yeah, it pretty much is. He's obviously, you know, he's been married before too.
Yeah.
So we've both done it. I will say I'm not closed off to it,
right.
But I think if I ever do, it won't be a wedding. I'll be like, take me on a month long trip to Thailand. Let's show up on the
beautiful.
Beach, wear some shit that's white and like call it a day.
That's beautiful. And I mean, you know, like traditional marriage, even though I was really excited to like be Mrs. and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm so happy to be married, but it was so funny because before I got married, my husband was like, you know, I already feel like I'm married to you.
Right.
You know, it's interesting to be married without like, you know, the government certificate says you're married. Like, it's like, you kind of don't really need it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Not to put a damper on anyone that's like planning extravagant weddings and things like that.
No.
'Cause I know that's like a fun.
And look, everybody looking back is like, shouldn't you have, you know, spent the money on your wedding on a house and blah, 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 blah. I will say, even with like the shit that went down in my life, my wedding, I produced the shit out of my wedding. It was the
your wedding was like on the Shaws of Sunset.
It was the best wedding I or anyone that attended will attest
really?
To has ever been to. We just cast the male lead wrong. Like it was wonderful.
Oh my God. You're like, it should have been Brad Pitt, but instead it was.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
but
crazy.
But I'm not closed off to it. It's,
yeah.
It's, you know, I'll never say never.
I know. And I'm so happy. So you guys live together. You got a house together. You got your dogs. You're living your life. You're working on your book.
Yeah.
Is this a book too? When do you think that's going to be
coming? I don't know. I've written over half of it.
That's great.
So it's definitely been harder to write this one than it was the first one.
Because you're happy.
Right, because I'm happy,
like,
but
do
also
I just keep writing about how good my life is or dead.
But also because the second book spans over, you know, 2 years.
Uh-huh.
This spans over 4 months. If
right.
you can believe that, like, the divorce, the relationship, the breakup, the Europe trip happened in that amount of time. It did.
Right.
And I was writing it as I was going through it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So now I'm sitting down and I'm looking back to like, okay, 2018, this conversation with this person, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard too, because my current guy, Tay, he went through a lot of that healing process with me. Aww. So we were like on, we were off, and he was always so good and supportive and like would let me go and figure my shit out. And, you know, always like opened his arms when I came back. Not that he let me like, you know, just leave and gallivant around, but like he knew that I was working through a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard on my soul to go back and write about the times where I pulled away from him and like did some stuff that he knows about. Like anytime we came back together, I was like, this is what happened. This is where I was. This is what I did.
And did he do stuff too or no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, when we were broken up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
But you guys were always
blatantly honest
and in love with each other through that.
Yeah. And I think that it took a lot of doing the work on myself to finally not be afraid of what was in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
I was so, one thing that my marriage did leave an impact on me was that I felt trapped in it. And I was so scared to
be
trapped again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it, so I would push away things that were good for me.
Cause you were like, is this safe? Is this like the other one? Is this going to be like part two? Like
totally.
Yeah, I know. It's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because so much goes into that, you know, it's scary. Like even me, like I was like single for a year before I got with my husband. And I remember thinking like I had rented this cute little house in Larchmont. I was so cozy and, you know, you uproot yourself.
Yeah.
I moved in here and you know, the change your address and change everything and change your whole life and, mm-hmm. you know, move out to Calabasas from like West Hollywood.
Yeah, it's a big
change. Shift. And, you know, it makes people very vulnerable to mm-hmm. fall in love. But
yeah.
But the fact that I'm sitting here with you and you got so much out of it and such a learning experience and you said you don't regret anything. So it's like.
Not at all. And it's totally changed my career.
Yeah.
I mean, like I was an actress and a director. That's what I did.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, you're familiar with, you know, the industry. It's like as an actress, it's just like book a job.
And if you can.
If you can. And if you're not.
I haven't booked a job in 8 years. No, I'm just kidding.
And if you're not, then like you're not fucking working.
Right, exactly.
It's like,
yeah.
It's not the most comfortable industry.
Yeah.
And this is totally, especially with the pandemic when everything's fucking
shut down,
like not
slow,
going on.
Yeah.
I mean, last year was my most successful year I've had because like this all shifted me into becoming an author.
Yeah.
And how lucky am I to get to be at home creating these like stupid TikTok videos that
love.
Go viral.
I'm obsessed with TikTok. I got to follow you on there.
It's like, I was so against it at first. And then the pandemic hit and I was like, okay, I'm fucking bored.
Oh, I made Tommy get on there too. People were like, I can't believe Tommy
is on
TikTok.
The content on there is really like.
I love it. It's so
really
relatable.
Entertaining.
And it's relatable because like, I feel like when you like something, they send
yeah.
people, anyone that's anti-TikTok, bye, okay? Because it's like so fun. You know, when you like something, they send you more videos like that. So
yeah.
my whole feed is like how to not have anxiety,
yep.
funny shit,
yep.
and dogs.
I know. I see some of the shit you share on your Instagram and you're like, oh, look, my life.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it really, they curate it to like what is, you
totally.
Know, what you like.
The algorithm so is unreal.
It's perfect. It's really great.
But like every time one of those ridiculous videos go viral, I start selling all these amounts of books and then I have nothing else to do. So I've been at home, you know, well, I do, you know, I have a podcast and like,
oh, okay, yeah.
I do work at home and like, you
right.
know, have stuff going on, but I've had so much time to be able to like connect with my readers who DM me and like hear all these beautiful stories. And like, it's so fulfilling to like
it is
see
fulfilling,
it come full
it?
Circle in that way. It's not only changed my life and changed me as a human, it's changed my entire career.
Don't you feel like you've created a little family?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I feel that way too. I like talking about anxiety and being really outspoken about mental health. And then people write to you and
yeah.
they say stuff that you're like, oh my God, my brain is in this person's brain as well.
Yeah.
And you feel like family, create this little safe,
yeah.
loving family.
And I think it's so great. I speak a lot about mental health on my platform too. I think it's really important mm-hmm. to, the more we talk about it, the less there's a stigma
Absolutely.
around it.
I'm all about that.
I listened to the episode you did with Dave Navarro and mm-hmm. it was just, there was so much good shit in there.
That's one of my favorite ones to date because he's very vulnerable.
Yeah.
Very
and it was
out there.
Really great. And it's
yeah.
so lovely to hear that from a man.
Yeah.
And it's really important to start talking about,
yeah.
you know, like, and I think that, you know, Javier did read the book mm-hmm. and we had like a very lengthy conversation about it. And when I told, you know, it was obviously really hard for him to read.
He's like, can I play my character in the movie?
Right. I'm dead. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Can I play myself? I would like to play myself. I'm dead.
But when I told him that I had gotten a handful, this was like obviously earlier on when it had only been out for a couple of months, but that I had gotten a handful of DMs from people saying, I was able to really relate to Javier and learn a lot about my own grief with someone that I lost because of what he went through with his brother. Wow. He was just like, oh, I get it. Like I get, and he speaks out on mental health a lot too. He's great. A very big advocate for that. So
it's about connecting. Yeah. It really is. And knowing
you're not alone.
And knowing you're not alone and not being ashamed. Cause I especially feel like in our industry, mm-hmm. you know, when I started being really outspoken about my mental health, excuse me, which I wasn't at first. Like when I first did Vine and all that, I didn't really talk about it, even though I was struggling really hard. I just started talking about it like a couple years ago. And I noticed when I did that, I didn't have any more auditions. Mm. I started not getting cast and stuff. And like, I noticed everything kind of slowed down
for
me.
How shitty is that?
Because I think people, unfortunately, even though a lot of people feel the same way on the inside, they're mm-hmm. like, it's kind of old school thinking to go, oh, well, we keep that quiet though. And if you're talking right. about it, you must be a crazy person.
You must not be stable on set.
Right. You must not be stable, or we don't want her to have a panic attack if we book her in a movie or whatever. And it's like, so many people go through the same thing and yeah. they just don't talk about it, you know? And I just think it needs to be shared and it needs to be open. And who cares if someone has a panic attack on set? Like, care for them, love them, like yeah. know that this is a part of life. You know what I mean?
And by the way, people are doing that. They're just not classifying it as a mental health crisis.
Yeah, and they're not telling you. There's yeah. people that are having and then you're not telling you. And I've had 1,000 and I didn't tell anyone, you yeah. know? Talk to people like they're fine and then you're like, you really realize that they're having a horrible panic attack.
Yeah. Especially in the day of social media where you go online and everybody's showing like the highlight reel of their
life.
Oh,
yeah.
And it's like so perfect. And everybody's sitting behind a screen going, fuck, why don't I have this? Why is my life not like this? She must be like, have it sewed together. So when I still do this till this day. But when I went on that Europe trip, I was planning on like not being on social media at all. I was going to post that one picture of me in my backpack, be like, yo, I'm getting a divorce. These are the details. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Before I got on the plane, like the 2 hours before I got on the plane, I got hundreds and hundreds of messages like, oh my God, this touched my soul. Oh my God, thank you for being so vulnerable. Please keep sharing your journey. Holy shit, this changed my day.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm so thankful for that because I ended up posting throughout my trip. Some pictures are like fun and me partying and happy. And some pictures I'm like, okay, so I've cried for 5 hours today and shit sucks and I'm broken. And I think it's so important for people to show up, especially when we have a platform of any kind, to show up authentically and be yeah. like, yo, dude, it's not all fucking peaches and rainbows. Like,
and be real.
Everybody's human. Shit sucks a lot of the time. And like, you're not alone.
Yeah. I think that's the most important thing I've changed my platform to do, mm-hmm. you know, talking about it and just keeping the conversation open. We have to,
yeah,
you know, and
absolutely.
And you're right. The amount of people that have reached out to me, I can't even answer the hundreds of messages I get every day of people saying that, you know, I struggle with this, I struggle with that. So many people.
Yep.
You know, and even the people that are posting the highlight reels, they're struggling too. Cause it's
they're
like
usually struggling more.
More, yeah. Cause they feel the need to be like, no, I want everyone to think my life is perfect, even though they're sitting there, you know, posting something, waiting to see how many likes it gets and wanting to feel valued yeah. and validated and that kind of thing. You know, I've like given up on that.
Yeah.
You know, I've given up on needing people to validate me. I'm like, I'm going to share what I feel is important to share. And you either like it or you don't. And that's fair to you either way. You know,
yeah.
you have a choice. So, yeah. You know, I think that's great. And I'm so happy for you.
Thank
Are you,
you
in therapy now? Do you do therapy?
I'm in therapy on and off. I'm always an advocate of it.
Yeah.
And I have a therapist who I kind of call and check in with occasionally. Mm-hmm. I'm not on like a regular schedule
right,
anymore.
Right.
I was for a lot
right.
of time. But there's been moments where I've had sessions scheduled and uh-huh. I'm like, well, I'm not really needing anything.
You're like, I don't have anything to talk about, right? Because sometimes when you do so much self-work,
yeah.
you know, in meditation, you get everything out. You're yeah. kind of like, you know, I actually
but
feel.
It's those sessions that you go to
yeah.
and some gnarly, incredible shit ends up clicking and you're like, oh my God,
yeah.
what if I didn't come today? So I'm a big advocate of talking about your feelings even when, you know, you're feeling fucking fine and dandy.
Totally. I mean, I actually, I do therapy, I do EMDR, and then I do regular therapy. And I find that, you know, sometimes when I don't have anything to talk about, that's actually part of the therapy, mm-hmm. is because you've been so consistent and you've been talking about things so much that you're working through them, believe it or not. And yeah. it's like, you just have to keep showing up. You know what I mean? So that's
I've always wanted to try EMDR.
I'm doing it right now. It's really interesting. And it's funny because I tell her all the time. And for those of you that don't know what it is, it's, I don't even know exactly what EMDR stands for, but it's basically like, there's either, they either give you like little things to hold that vibrate and you focus on your trauma and try to, you know, talk about your work through your trauma, and then you follow either a light with your eyes, or you have little things that vibrate in your hands, and it basically just dilutes your trauma. Mm-hmm. You take yourself back to how you felt then, and you talk to yourself then, or if it was recent, now, you know, yeah. that kind of thing, and then you basically just work on diluting your trauma. And I keep telling her, and you create like a safe space, like you put, you know, where do I feel safe, and create this imaginary place, and then you have a place that you put all the negative thoughts, so that when you're stuck in a negative loop, you go, okay, nope, I'm going to take that thought and I'm going to put it in here. Mm-hmm. Take that thought, I'm going to put it in here. And then basically what happens is it's like basically diluting your trauma. But I tell her, you know, she's like, when you're triggered, you need to remember, you know, where to put the negative thoughts. You need to remember right. where your safe space is. And I tell her, like, sometimes when I'm having a panic attack, I don't feel like I can concentrate and put stuff in places.
Right.
But she said, like, subconsciously, you'll see eventually it works away. But, I mean, it's definitely very interesting and very helpful. And I will say that I usually, like, call an ambulance when I have a really gnarly panic attack because I think I'm dying because they're so intense. But the last couple times I've had them recently, where I would have called an ambulance because my heart rate was like 160 and my little reader's going like hypertensive crisis or like call 911. Instead of doing that, I just calm myself down and tell myself like I'm safe. No one's ever died from a panic attack. You know, like I sit there and comfort myself. I take some CBD. And then if I'm not completely calm and I can't get myself to calm down, I can take a Valium. So I know that like I'm going to do exactly what they're going to do at the hospital. Right. You know what I mean? And so I've noticed that that's a difference.
That's
whereas
huge.
I would have ran to the hospital, which is not the place you want to go right now, especially with all the COVID. And they don't need to deal with someone who's having a panic attack amidst everything that's going on.
Right, when they're turning like sickly people
exactly.
away.
Like they're like ambulances are waiting 45 minutes and, you know, so chill out. But yeah, I've noticed like progress in myself that way. And strengthen myself that way. So I definitely think it's working.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I've loved having you here, and I can't wait to read the full book because I've just read little blips about it to learn more about your story. And guys, if you want to get this, it's on Amazon, Eat, Pray, Fuck My Life by Gabrielle Stone. And it's also on eatprayfuckmylife.com.
Yeah, and it's in order it. Paperback, ebook, and audiobook. And I voice the...
You do. It's your voice. See, I love audiobooks because if you have a long drive or if you're going to visit family or if you're whatever, you know, hopefully you're not going to visit family right now, but if you're going on a long drive or going somewhere, you put on an audiobook and the time is like this.
Yeah.
It kind of just helps you like focus, you know, get stuff done and go flying. And people can follow you on @Gabrielle Stone.
Yes.
It's not the Gabrielle Stoner,
no.
is it? Okay.
No.
@Gabrielle Stone on Instagram.
On Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Everything. Gabrielle Stone. I've loved having you here. This
Thank
was
you.
So fun and so enlightening.
Thank you for having
me,
girl.
And I'm so proud of you. Like, Thank you. God, what a freaking life. I'm like, I'm in awe of you because I think to myself one day I want to be able to do something by myself, but I don't know. Maybe,
you will,
maybe
dude.
Not.
Everyone that like messages me and they're like, oh my God, I wish I had the courage. And I say to everybody, you do. You just have to find it inside of you. And sometimes it takes longer, you know, but like.
I'm just trying to go to Rite Aid by myself. I'm like, fuck Majorca. I just need to go pick up my prescription.
I'm just trying to get down the street.
Yeah. I'm like, Tommy, can you come? Can I bring the dog? Is anyone hello? What if I have a panic attack in Rite Aid? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
I'm working on it. But I love it, guys. Follow Gabrielle. Make sure to check out her book. And make sure to stay tuned next week for another episode of Worst.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.